Looking for a job isn't easy. It used to be that you could apply at a big name tech company and build a great career for yourself. But times have changed. Many of these companies have gone full woke. And if you aren't the right gender, ethnicity, you don't use pronouns, or if you're not an activist for the preferred cause, then good luck. Why would you risk your career on that? At Red Balloon, we're connecting good employees with top quality companies that value you for your skills and your work ethic, not your social activism score. Employers who post jobs on Red Balloon are focused on creating an enjoyable and productive work culture, free from divisive woke mandates. So if you want to find a serious career path without the nonsense, come to Red Balloon and post your resume today. Because you shouldn't have to choose between your job and your values. That's redballoon.work, where you can find your future.
The reason that I'm fighting to end abortion is because I'm a Christian, and I'm fighting it as a Christian. It's not just because babies are cute. It's because babies are created in the image of God. And to kill innocent children is indeed murder. And it's not only an attack on those children, but ultimately it's an attack upon their creator who made them in his image.
Hey everyone, Michael Thiessen here, and today on Open Mic, we are speaking with Pastor Brian Gunter. Brian, thanks for coming on the show. We've got a pretty deep subject matter to go through, a fairly difficult subject matter that I've been covering a lot recently, and that is your work in Louisiana, and then now as it expands up to Kentucky around equal protection bills for preborn children. So thank you for coming on and chatting with us today.
Yeah, it's so good to be here with you. Very important discussion that we're going to have.
Yeah, so Brian, I first met you when we went to the Creation Museum and here in Kentucky, and we were up there in order to hear about your new initiative in Kentucky. But why don't you take our listeners back to some of the work that you've been doing down in Louisiana, and maybe why don't you just take them all the way back to kind of your journey through the pro-life establishment and where you are at now.
Yeah, so I became a pastor when I was 19 years old, so I'm 36 now, so it's kind of about a 17-year journey. I grew up in church, and if you would have asked me at any point throughout my upbringing if I were pro-life, of course I would have told you yes. But what really got me involved in fighting against abortion and trying to minister to mothers and fathers who were pregnant outside of marriage and some of whom were considering abortion. What really got me into that ministry was I was a student in Fort Worth at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in 2008. And I had a Hebrew professor who invited his students to go and share the gospel on the sidewalk outside of an abortion clinic in Fort Worth, Texas. And I remember that day vividly. All these years later, it's 15 years later now, and I remember the women who went in to have an abortion. I remember how I realized that children were being killed right in front of me. It really just indelibly marked my heart and my soul with the plight of preborn children who were being killed in these abortion clinics across America. At that time, about 4,000 a day. So fast forwarding in my ministry, I began to get involved with volunteering at pregnancy centers. I would often counsel young couples, especially when the father was coming to counseling, and led a lot of young people to faith in Christ because they were unbelievers, pregnant outside of marriage, coming for help, not only helping them to see the gift of life and to choose life for their child, but also to know Christ. And so I volunteered in that capacity at a pregnancy center in Stephenville, Texas for a number of years. And then I came to Louisiana and I wanted to volunteer at my local pregnancy center and realized that there wasn't a local pregnancy center in Alexandria, Louisiana. I was pastoring First Baptist Church in Pollock, which is about 10 miles north of Alexandria at the time. And so I prayed and I asked God to help me start the first pregnancy center in central Louisiana. And there was about a four-year journey where working with hundreds of local churches and pastors, and my success was really through approaching pastors and then pastors getting their churches on board. We founded a pregnancy center that turned into three pregnancy centers across the state of Louisiana. Sinlaw Pregnancy Center was opened in December of 2017 and has served well over 1,000 mothers and fathers in a crisis pregnancy and saved hundreds of children who would have been otherwise aborted. In that time, I also began working with Louisiana Right to Life, which is my state's largest pro-life organization. And I wanted to fight to end abortion on the legislative side. I wanted to see the abortion clinics in the state of Louisiana shut down. And so I was doing ministry on the sidewalk outside of abortion clinics regularly. I had started doing that in Texas and then did that in Louisiana when I moved here. I spent most of my time at the Shreveport Abortion Clinic, although I did go to the ones in Baton Rouge and New Orleans as well. I began lobbying the Louisiana legislature on pro-life bills, actually took a staff position after volunteering for 4 years with Louisiana Right to Life. Then I worked in a staff position as the outreach director for Louisiana Right to Life. I led pro-life marches across the state of Louisiana. We started with two marches when I took the position, and being one of the key leaders in those pro-life marches, we grew to five marches in five of the largest cities in our state, and we a total of over 20,000 people that I would lead in marching in those five cities each year. And so I did that for 4 years and actually a few years before that when I was a volunteer. So, really did a lot of work in the pro-life movement, fighting to end abortion legislatively and fighting to help mothers and fathers and establish pregnancy centers and then ministering on the sidewalk outside of abortion clinics. So that is a summary of about the last 16 years, the 16 years leading up to what has happened in the last year. And the last year has really just turned everything upside down.
Our federal government's response to economic difficulties is to print money until it's worthless, driving up the cost of everything, essentially stealing from your hard-earned pay. What you need is to take control of your own resources and to be responsible for your own money, which is your responsibility. Bull Bitcoin wants to help you do just that. Bull Bitcoin is 100% self-funded, freedom-minded Canadian Bitcoin exchange that wants to protect your financial freedom and help you protect your resources. If you're at all aware of what's going on in our country, you should seriously consider connecting with my friends over at Bull Bitcoin and buying at least some Bitcoin today. Sign up at mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC. That's mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC, and have all of your questions answered. That's mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC. Thanks everyone for supporting them. Okay, so I want to try to help people. This is going from one pastor to another. This question is going to sound insane, but it's a legitimate question that so many Bible believing, God fearing people struggle with. And that is, connect the dot between the word advocacy and ministry. Because so many individuals are walking around with a very, it's almost like a curtain where there's Christians on one side of the curtain and then there's Christians on the other side of the curtain. And once you and I kind of just peer behind the curtain, we go, oh, back here, this is the whole inner workings of the theater back here. And if I get to work back here, it's kind of going to help out front. And and yet there's people standing on the other side of the curtain going, where'd you go? And why are you being an advocate? That advocacy isn't ministry. And yet when you're on the other side of the curtain where you and I are, it's like, no, this is all one. You know, the curtains are going to be unveiled at some point and you're going to see it as one cohesive unit. In your own words, try to explain what I've just tried to explain there. Why are there Christians who would see pro-life advocacy so separate from the term ministry or sharing the gospel?
Yeah, well, I don't divide the sacred and the secular up, and neither did Jesus. So I'll just say this. The reason that I'm fighting to end abortion is because I'm a Christian, and I'm fighting it as a Christian. It's not just because babies are cute. It's because babies are created in the image of God. And to kill innocent children is indeed murder. And it's not only attack on those children, but ultimately it's an attack upon their creator who made them in his image. And that's why they have so much value. And that's why they are worth such striving and so much effort to protect their lives. So, you know, I think Christians need to understand that the kingdom of God is not some ephemeral thing that's out there, but rather Jesus taught us in the Lord's Prayer to pray for thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now, don't misunderstand me. I don't think that we are going to accomplish this on our own by our own human efforts. But I do believe that Jesus calls us to fight for the truth and to fight for justice and to trust that ultimately one day Christ, when he consummates all things, will bring perfect justice in the very end. However, I look at the fight against slavery throughout the British Empire. I'm currently reading Eric Metaxas's book on William Wilberforce, which is just incredible. I haven't finished it yet, but it is fantastic. Wilberforce was a giant of the faith, and he was a Christian politician. And so we need to understand that fighting to end slavery was a righteous cause, and it brought glory to Jesus Christ. So we have been poorly discipled if we think that there is some sort of division between the sacred and the secular, as if Jesus Christ doesn't have all authority in heaven and on earth. He does. And so Psalm chapter 2 is a warning to the rulers of the earth that they should kiss the Son, lest he be angry with them and they perish in the way. And so we have clear teaching throughout the Old and New Testament that God's people are to fight to establish justice through the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we always we use Psalm 2 as our final evangelism piece. Just if someone's resisting the Lord, we just say, kiss the Son, lest he be angry with you. Have a lovely day. No, absolutely. This conversation is so important because the church has been living as if there's this Jesus is King of Kings, except he's not King of the experts. He's the King of Kings, but he's not the King of the medical community. He's the Lord of Lords, but he's not the Lord over my local politicians. And there's this great confusion within the church right now of this area that people also don't see the connection between talking about Christ and sin in the context of this important issue. I'm sure you've had a great opportunity many times to share the gospel of Christ in the midst of warning people not to go murder their children.
Yeah, and let me just say something that's really important, and we're seeing this a lot right now in really progressive Christianity. We do not have a gospel for victims. We have a gospel for sinners. You don't need Jesus' blood to cleanse you from all the terrible things that other people have done to you. He can bring healing for those things, but that's not primarily why you need Jesus. You need Jesus' blood to cleanse you from your own sin. We are enemies of God who war against the perfect creator of heaven and earth, and we need him to forgive us for our unrighteousness. We are not good people who need Jesus to heal our wounds. We are wretched sinners who need Jesus to save us from what we deserve for our sins. And that is so important that we bring the gospel to bear on the matter of abortion. Listen, I love mothers and fathers who are in a crisis pregnancy outside of marriage, who may even be considering taking the life of their own child. But what I will not do is lie to them and say that, well, it's okay, or, you know, you're really a victim of the circumstances of your life. Yeah, they may be in a terrible situation. I have ministered to homeless women who were considering abortion. Okay, I know that they may be facing terrible things, but they still have a child, and it's their duty to protect that child, and they certainly have no right to take that child's life, because it would be very difficult to raise that child, or they couldn't imagine allowing that child to be adopted by a Christian family. Listen, we are called to protect children. That is part of what we must do as Christians, and we must be willing to sacrifice our own comfort, our own convenience, our own time, our own resources, our money, whatever it takes. We should be protecting these little children. And this is at the very heart of the gospel. This isn't something outside the gospel. This isn't something secondary to the gospel. The Imago Dei, the image of God, that we are all created by him and for him, reflecting his glory. This is what makes us valuable. This is what makes our lives meaningful. This is why we are here and fighting to end one of the greatest evils in human history, the slaughter of children by abortion. This is a righteous cause, and it glorifies Christ.
And I agree with you that the moment we start categorizing our the moment there is a victimhood theology, there is a, like, I my listeners will know that I've said this before, there is a psychosomatic, in, you know, appeal to church where pastors are getting up in the pulpit and it's like, hey, just come in, Jesus is going to heal, he's just going to, and you sit there the whole sermon and you go, I don't know if he's talked about my rebellious heart once. I sure feel pretty good about myself. And man, I'm such a worthy person that Christ would come and just be such a great teddy bear for me. again, the moment you are able, good, I'm glad you laughed at that, because that it was meant to God's humor. The moment we get back to humans are rebellious, humans will murder their babies. Because even when you're, you know, Brian, when we're talking about having empathy for those people who are in difficult circumstances, there are the difficult circumstances, but the reality of it is people are liars and murderers and will do so to their own convenience, even if it means murdering their own baby. And it is the confrontation with that that allows us the ability to then preach to them, fear the Lord, turn to Christ, be renewed by the Spirit. And so I just want to commend you, and I hope that your efforts, we're going to get into the particulars of the legal side, but I wanted to start with this part of the discussion, because for so many years, Christians have seen maybe faithful pro-lifers out on a street corner, and they're not making the connection in any way to the kingdom of heaven. The moment we are willing to look at a beautiful young lady who's ready to murder her baby and say to her, if you do this, you'll be a murderer, and I warn you not to do this. The moment we're willing to look at our legislatures and say, I warn you in the name of Christ to start defending babies, the gospel will penetrate this culture in a way it hasn't done in 50 years because we've not connected these dots. And it's like this with every area of justice. Our appeal is to the Lord, so we stand in his name, and our appeal then is to the Lord and then for justice as both the definer of justice, as the upholder of justice, and as the merciful one who will forgive sin. So it's just great that you've entered into this conversation with that backdrop, with that entire theological framework. And I appreciate that so much. And I hope our listeners are grasping some of the language we're using here to describe it. Okay, I want to read from your bio, and then we're gonna now transition into kind of the technical work you're doing now. And so your bio says, Brian spent years working inside the pro-life establishment. And that's, of course, you mentioned that Louisiana Right to Life.
And when I say pro-life establishment, I mean like National Right to Life and all the affiliated entities. So Louisiana Right to Life is that in my state. But when I say pro-life establishment, I mean the mainstream pro-life movement, which is primarily led by the National Right to Life Committee.
Okay. And it basically, you know, your bio says you saw over and over again how pro-life leaders often betray the very babies they claim to be fighting for. Now, I know I've heard you share this. This is partly why I wanted you to come on the podcast. There is now a new part of the conversation going on. And as outsiders, people are saying, I don't even know what this word abolitionist means. And for the insiders, there seems to be a pretty serious fight going on. So why don't you explain to us this experience that you had about looking for a better and more righteous way, and maybe explain this language a little bit to individuals who will go, wait a minute, I've been pro-life my whole life. That means abolition. Like, of course, I'm an abolitionist. Why are we using this framework now? Why are we using this terminology?
Yeah, well, abolition means to totally legally abolish. That is to totally legally prohibit some practice. So the abolition of slavery is when slavery was totally prohibited under law. No slavery at all whatsoever. No exceptions. You can't own a slave if. No, you just can't own a slave, period. Not a single person is allowed to own a slave at all. That's what abolition means. So when we talk about the abolition of abortion, we mean that no one has the right to kill a baby and no baby can be killed, period. No abortion at all under any circumstances. Total abolition of abortion. Now, that doesn't mean that things will not continue to happen in violation of those laws. I mean, we have laws which abolish other types of murder, and yet murder still takes place. But our laws do not permit murder except in the case of abortion. And so what we see is that the law should be established based on our civil law should be established based on God's law. When I say civil law, I mean that from a biblical sense. It is our criminal statutes, legally speaking, but it's what the Bible calls the civil law, the laws of our nation, which includes our criminal statutes. They should take what is right and wrong, God's moral law, summed up in the Ten Commandments, you shall not murder. And we should put that into our law code in our nations. And so what we see is that in the pro-life movement, most people over the years who have taken the label pro-life, they meant abolition. I know that's what I meant. When I was working in the pro-life movement, when I was leading all those marches, I was saying publicly, abortion is murder, and it has to be totally ended. No exceptions, no compromises, no abortion, period. It's never right to kill a baby. And we can get into instances, what about this, what about that? And I can answer those, but I hold to totally ending abortion, period. Abortion is never needed to save a life. Abortion is never right. You can't kill children because they're sick. You can't kill children because they're unwanted. You can't kill their children because their fathers were rapists or incestuous. No, you just can't kill children. That's my position. That's what I mean by abolition. And I thought that's what pro-life was. And honestly, I think the majority of people who call themselves pro-life believe that as well. But here's what happened. I was working in the pro-life establishment as an employee of Louisiana Right to Life, and we would lobby our state legislature with bills that would say things like, well, you can't do these types of abortions. Well, you can't kill children after this age. And I was always conflicted, like, man, let's just have a bill that says, you know, life begins at the moment of fertilization, the moment when the sperm and the egg meets. And once a life is created, you can't kill that child. That's what we say we believe. Let's just put it into law. And the reason that I was told that we could not do that by attorneys and by, you know, very prominent political leaders and national leadership as well, was that you can't do that because of Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade says that a woman has a constitutional right to abortion and access to abortion, and so we have to operate within the confines of the Supreme Court. Well, honestly, later I came to a point where I thought if the Supreme Court tells you that you have to allow babies to be killed, you should, Acts 5:29, you should obey God rather than man. When Dred Scott said that a black man was a piece of property and not a person, that a black man has no more rights than a horse, he's like a piece of farm equipment or a farm animal. When the Supreme Court said that in the Dred Scott decision in 1858, they were wrong. And by the way, the states which were told to return escaped slaves to their slave owners in the South, those northern states, specifically the state of New York and then Governor William Seward, they told the federal government to go pound sand because they weren't returning escaped slaves so they could be re-enslaved. And you know what? They were right. But, you know, at the time, I said, okay, I this is out of my league. I'm not an attorney. I guess we're going to have to follow Roe v. Wade. I don't hold that position anymore. But a few years ago, that's where I was. But now Roe's been overturned and things are totally different because now the Supreme Court says that states can totally prohibit abortion. Dobbs gives states the right to totally abolish abortion. That would not be against what Dobbs says. However, when you think about it, I will say that the Dobbs decision was not all good. Because under the 14th Amendment, we're told that every person has the right to equal protection under the law. And I believe that the child in the womb is a person. And that child has a right to life. And that right to life begins when their life begins, which is the moment of fertilization. So I actually believe what the Supreme Court should have done in Dobbs, someone could say, well, that'll never happen. I don't care if the people on the Supreme Court would do it. I'm telling you what they ought to have done. And the reality is what they ought to have done is said the 14th Amendment guarantees the right to life to every person from the moment that their life begins at fertilization until the moment of natural death. That's what they should have said in the Dobbs decision, but instead they said states can decide whether or not they want to allow babies to be murdered within their jurisdiction. And so now we're living in a situation where states are being told by the U.S. Supreme Court, if you want to abolish abortion, you can. And so what I did was, now this was before the Dobbs decision came out, so I introduced a bill through State Representative Danny McCormick, and I did this working with Attorney Bradley Pierce of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion and End Abortion Now, which is a national ministry led by Jeff Durbin. And together, we introduced a bill, House Bill 813, in the Louisiana legislature in the 2022 legislative session. And this was a bill to abolish abortion in the state of Louisiana. It was a bill that would have had to defy Roe at the time because Roe had not yet been overturned. That happened a month later after the bill failed. This was a bill that would have said life begins at the moment of fertilization. What's in the womb is life, and it must be equally protected with all other persons. No one has the right to kill a baby, not even their mother. And I took this to legislators and Republicans, and I said, here's our bill, and you say you believe this, you're pro-life, life begins at fertilization. The bill says that, and it says that the same laws that protect born persons will now protect pre-born persons. House Bill 813 and other bills of equal protection and abolition, they don't actually establish new laws. They simply include pre-born children under the laws which already protect human life. See, what we're doing is we're saying life doesn't begin at birth. It begins at fertilization. Because our current laws in every state in America, they actually only protect your life from the moment of birth, not from the moment of fertilization. Because all current laws in every state in the United States of America, these laws say that a mother has the right to kill her child if she chooses to do so. Now, we may have laws that prohibit abortion clinics from operating, such as in my state in Louisiana and in a lot of more red states across America. But what we don't have in any state is a law which grants equal protection to preborn children so that they have the exact same legal protection as born persons. In other words, all 50 states have laws which discriminate against preborn humans and say they don't have the same right to life as born persons. And that is wrong. And what I realized was when I introduced a bill to give equal protection to preborn children, the pro-life establishment came out and fought me hard.
Hey friends, I'm happy to talk to you again about RockLink Investment Partners. With inflation at 40-year highs and economic stagflation on the horizon, growing and preserving your hard-earned capital is of utmost importance. I know it's on my mind. And that's why RockLink Investment Partners are so essential, because they understand the investment challenges of today. RockLink is an independent investment management firm focused solely on creating portfolios of high-quality businesses anchored to the time-tested principles of value investing, and they do not shy away from essential businesses that do not meet the World Economics Forum's definition of ESG. So email RockLink at info@rocklink.com. That's RockLink with a C, or visit them at www.rocklink.com. And again, that's link with a C. You mentioned this when we were up at the Creation Museum, and I'm a fellow for the Ezra Institute. I know Jeff Durbin through that ministry, and his ministry at Apologia. And you gave this testimony about how the pro-life establishment fought you hard. This has really been our experience. I'm just going to bring this back to broader Christianity for a minute and then get right back into it. But this really, you know, I'm a homeschooling father, and we've been doing that for over maybe about 10 or 11 years now. And I remember being that young youth pastor speaking to homeschooling families when my children were just infants, saying they need socialization. They need proper professional teachers. They need, and repeating all of those same ideas. And then simply just being confronted with the book of Proverbs through a Kevin Swanson sermon, looking into education, the power of education, according to the socialists, and then looking at the theories of education led me to say, no, we can certainly experiment with a better model, and is certainly if we're returning to the biblical prescriptions, and we need to trust scripture over and above. You still have some of your greatest enemies to homeschooling are Christians who are deeply invested into the public system. And they keep trying to sell it as though they're redeeming it. When you look at them now and you're outside of it again, it's in front of the veil, behind the veil. You've pushed the veil back. They're really like, it's just a mild curtain. There is no real separation, but there's this appearance of it. And you just look in the back of the belly of the beast and go, no, why aren't you seeing this? And so it's just so normal for some of our greatest enemies to be those people who, you know, want to accept maybe the good in order to deny the great, or they want to be comfortable with just a little bit, and yet be defeated with all of the substance that you could bring to them about the conversation. So it doesn't surprise me that you encountered this and that you encountered it from, you know, the establishment, because again, pro-life industry can just become just like that. It can be its own industry. Yeah. Help our listeners understand, Brian, their logic, their rhetoric to you to say, we don't want equal protection. Because again, as I've entered into this conversation, it's like, that's what we've been wanting our whole life, isn't it? Like, when I say I'm pro-life, I want to end abortion and I want equal protection for children, for preborn children. Like, this is not rocket science. This is what we've always wanted. What's going on? So explain to me their rhetoric to you as to why going after equal protection is so problematic for them.
Yeah. So, and the way I'll do this is by kind of telling the story about how the bill progressed. So when we got this bill before a House committee, we had 9 members on that committee. And of those 9 members, 7 voted in favor of the bill. So it passed the House committee with flying colors. And it was because I just took it to these legislators and said, you believe life begins at the moment of fertilization? Yes, that's what this bill says. And you believe that children in the womb should have equal protection, the same right to life that you enjoy as a born person? And they said, yes. Okay, this is your bill. And they passed it. It was amazing. First time in American history, by the way, that a bill of abolition and equal protection has ever passed any state legislative body. First time in American history that's ever happened. And so it's pretty incredible that took place. But when this bill was being reportedly favorably reported to the House floor in Louisiana, the pro-life establishment went into overdrive. And we had members of U.S. Congress. We had national leadership within the pro-life establishment. We had the organization that I had worked for, that I had to leave my position because I knew that they didn't support my legislation. And I also, I mean, I was going to leave anyways because I was too busy as a pastor to do both. But also I began to realize that Louisiana Right to Life, National Right to Life, they didn't want to totally prohibit abortion. Abolition was not their goal. Their goal was to simply shut down abortion clinics, but not to prohibit abortion for the mother. Their stated position is that abortion should be permitted for the mother, but not for anyone else. That's their position. And they call it pro-life. It's not what I mean by pro-life when I use that term, but it's what they mean by it. And so the pro-life establishment went into overdrive. And in the week between when our bill passed House Committee 7-2 and when it went to the floor, I had counted 72 out of 105 legislators who told me through phone calls and in-person meetings and text messages they were going to vote for the bill. So I had a super majority. If the governor vetoed it, at least in the House and probably in the Senate at that time, although I hadn't polled the entire Senate because we were going to the House first, we had a super majority. We would have passed the bill. We could have even overturned the governor's veto. And so we had a real shot at passing a bill to totally end abortion in the state of Louisiana by giving children equal protection in the womb. And so a letter came out dated May 12th, the very day that our bill went to the House floor for a vote. And it was authored by the National Right to Life Committee and signed by over 70 so-called pro-life organizations across the United States of America, basically all the major pro-life organizations. I'm a Southern Baptist, and I was especially grieved that the ethics and religious liberty of the Southern Baptist Convention, their interim president at the time, now president, Brent Leatherwood, signed this letter, and I confronted him about this later on the floor of the Southern Baptist Convention in Anaheim, California, and that video is available online. But anyways, I was grieved that all of these so-called pro-life organizations signed a letter which said, and you can go read it, search for National Right to Life Committee letter to state lawmakers. And they wrote to every state lawmaker in the United States of America that we oppose any bill which would make it a crime for a mother to have an abortion. They said these bills criminalize women. Well, that rhetoric is absurd. Laws don't criminalize classes of people. The Constitution does not allow laws to do that. Laws criminalize conduct. We weren't criminalizing women. We were criminalizing baby murder. But see, they wanted to play this leftist game of shifting the language, this Orwellian doublespeak of, well, you want to criminalize women. I mean, you see this with social justice advocates. You know, they'll say, oh, well, laws about theft, these laws criminalize minorities. No, they don't. They criminalize theft, right? We're not criminalizing classes of people. We're criminalizing behavior. We're criminalizing the murder of a child. And I don't believe anyone should have a license to murder a child. And I find it shocking that so many people would reject that presupposition.
No, and Brian, it's because they, I want to jump in there because it's because they get suckered into this leftist idea, which they don't even understand is propaganda to stir up controversy. So the whole class language and a class versus class language is a Marxist tool to stir up dissension, not to ever actually deal with finding wholeness for the class. It's the proletariat against the bourgeois that never ever ends. Let's just find another. So it's not like they're really even trying to solve any problems for women. They're simply utilizing a tactic that they don't understand where the end actually goes. They're using a tactic that sounds like it appeases women, it victimizes women, it brings them into the oppressed category. And they go, great, people will like that because then it feels like we are relieving women of their oppression. When what it actually does not do is relieve women of oppression, from the condemnation of being a murderer, from the emotional and physical scarring of having tools inserted into your uterus to chop up your baby, from the loss of motherhood, from the all of these things. So they're just totally baited in, and they don't understand that the language itself has nothing to do with liberation of women. It simply has to do with stirring up controversy between men and women that is artificial so that there'll be chaos and that there will be a need for the state to come in and organize and legislate that chaos. When an equal protection bill, what you're talking about, dealing with the individual as a responsible agent who is responsible to God and responsible to the state, does alleviate that oppression of women. I've been on your website. I want to give a few shout outs to some of the websites that you guys have put up. So everybody, if you're interested in these types of conversations, you need to go to Abolish Abortion. And we're living in the state of Kentucky right now. So abolishabortionky.org. And you can go and read about these things where there's some very important Q&As asked that talk about what is the difference between criminalizing women and actually criminalizing behavior. And you've done a great amount of work to explain how coercion is a part of the legal system, and dealing with coercion is a part of a legal prosecution. And, you know, potentially if a woman is coerced into an action, then that, you know, that the legal system can deal with that. So you've done a great job there. It's tragic. It goes back to this. It goes back between the front veil and behind the veil. It's like you and I look behind the veil and we'll go, yeah, you know, if you look at the language of victimizing women, that's just, you see Karl Marx at the very back there in that chair. That's just him and Engels. All they're trying to do is create a revolution. They're not actually trying to minister to women out here who are in my pews, in my church, on the street, walking down the road, looking for marriage, looking for motherhood, all of these great things. They're not dealing out there. They're just literally in the back trying to, you know, how do we create more controversy? And the fact that these Christian organizations are soft pedaling this, it's like they've never read a history book before, or they've never read the Communist Manifesto before. And you mentioned the Southern Baptist, but man, like that movement, it just rises and falls. It just goes up and down with the social justice movement and all of those types of things. So I just want to say great job, and wanted to explain to people, look, don't get baited into that language the way these organizations have, because they never actually achieve what their stated goal is. What they achieve is mothers against their children, women against their lovers, men against the women they should be marrying and protecting, men against their children. All it does is achieve further discord. It never achieves what it's saying it's supposed to do.
That's right. And that kind of really Marxist language of class warfare, as it were, of you're criminalizing women, not conduct. And that was being used by the Republican Party and the pro-life establishment. It wasn't being used by Democrats. They didn't have to make the argument. House Bill 813 in Louisiana was killed by people who called themselves pro-life. A bill to end abortion was stopped by the pro-life establishment. We had 72 votes in the House in favor, and Alan Seabaugh, state representative, who's now running for the Louisiana Senate, in committee, when he voted in favor of my bill, when he was asked to say yay or nay, he shouted, absolutely. And yet a week later, after the pro-life establishment had worked on him, he went to the microphone. He totally disavowed the bill. He apologized for ever supporting it. He spread lies. He's an attorney, and he told lies like, oh, if we pass this bill, women who had abortions 30 years ago could be arrested and charged with murder, which is absurd. Retroactive laws are banned by both the Louisiana Constitution and the U.S. Constitution, and he knows that as an attorney, but he's a liar, and so he has no scruples. When his political career was on the line, he chose self-preservation rather than preserving the lives of innocent children. He put himself before these babies, and he'll answer to Jesus Christ for that one day if he doesn't repent. But anyways, I saw this happen, and Alan Seabaugh proposed an amendment which gutted every last word of the bill. It just totally erased the bill and replaced it with a different bill which said that a baby's life is worth $10,000. So if an abortionist kills a baby, that abortionist will be fined $10,000, you know, about the value of a used car, not a very good used car, but a used car. And the mother has the total right to seek and procure an abortion. When they voted on his amendment, only two people were still in favor of HB 813 establishing equal protection. Two legislators of the original 72 who had promised to vote for it. That's the power of the pro-life establishment. I want to make this very clear. Abortion would be abolished in the state of Louisiana right now if it were not for the National Right to Life and the rest of the pro-life establishment. They secured the right for women to continue to abort their children in Louisiana. They fought for it and they won it. Those are facts. Now, someone might be asking, Michael, and we need to be clear about something here. They might be asking the question, well, I thought abortion was ended in states like Louisiana and Kentucky with these trigger laws. You don't have abortion clinics anymore. So isn't abortion ended anyways? Well, clinical abortion has been ended, but we've simply banned assisted abortion while keeping legal self-managed abortion. So it is perfectly legal for women in both Kentucky and Louisiana and many other similar states with trigger laws. It is perfectly legal for these mothers to order an abortion pill from an out-of-state source. Most of these states, like Louisiana, you can't buy an abortion pill in the state of Louisiana. I'm not talking about Plan B. I'm talking about RU486, mifepristone, the abortion pill. It causes an abortion up until around 12 to 13 weeks of pregnancy, the very end of the first trimester. The abortion pill can be ordered from an out-of-state source, shipped to the woman's home, and then she can legally have an abortion in her home and flush her child down the toilet. That is all legal. The right to order, to procure, to consume, to possess abortion pills, all of this is perfectly legal in all 50 states in America right now, including states that don't have abortion clinics. So we've not banned abortion. We've only banned assisted abortion, which, I mean, I'm glad there are no more abortion clinics in Louisiana and Kentucky, but that's not good enough. I mean, we need to stop children from being killed, not just stop one method of killing them. And so this is absurd. They have now, the pro-life establishment has now moved the goalposts to, well, we just don't want abortion clinics, but we're okay if women are still permitted to have abortions. Well, I'm not. I don't think children should be killed. And in fact, in the state of Louisiana, we have the highest rate of increase of the abortion pill by mail of all 50 states in America. So Louisiana, which has many times been called the most pro-life state in America because voters in Louisiana, on the order of 60 to 70%, say that abortion should be totally prohibited under the law. The state of Louisiana, the most pro-life state in America, has still legalized abortion with the abortion pill by mail. That's not what our voters want, but that's what the pro-life establishment wants. And so we have a system of government that's not representing the people and that's not protecting the most innocent people among us, children in the womb. And so it was grievous to me to see the very industry that was supposed to fight to protect the lives of preborn children betray those preborn children and give women a license to murder their own children in the womb. And they called it pro-life. All these bills that have been passed by the pro-life industry say abortion is prohibited except for the mother. And with the abortion pill by mail, women can easily have abortions at home, and it's perfectly legal in all 50 states in America, thanks to the pro-life establishment.
Brian, as you know, my podcast goes out in partnership with a number of other podcasts, and in connection with Canadians. And so I'm a Canadian living in the United States. I'm so happy to be here in Kentucky. In fact, we were just with Emily Calloway down in front of in Frankfurt, in front of the legislature there. Trying to support the bill that she has proposed, the equal protection bill. I just thought I'd let you know, for as an American, this February in Canada, there was a 38-week-old child, 38-week old unborn child who was aborted in Montreal. And that is gathering news in Canada. And I'm mentioning it to you only because of to encourage you to keep up this fight. Because in Canada, there are no abortion laws at all. And what that has done with the law is a good teacher. The scriptures talk about the law being our tutor until Christ. And then Christ, the ultimate lawgiver, lived the perfect life, expounded the law, corrected errors, and the tutor that was good, now we're under the king. Same law. So in Canada, when there is no law to teach, the value of unborn children is so low that a 38-week-old child can be aborted in Canada, literally butchered up, fully developed. And so I just want to encourage you to keep going to win this battle, because we have to get ground back. We've got to fight the pro-life establishment, those within the pro-life establishment who are not willing to table equal rights bills. I know that I've interviewed a number of other organizations that are in the midst of the battle, and they really agree with your position, and they're ready to link arm in arm. And so hopefully we'll see a rising up of some of these other groups that will help. But if we don't deal with this, if we don't return to equal rights, then what ends up happening is we go all the way to infanticide over time. Mm-hmm. And the law will teach. The flip side of that is the more we teach that baby murder is murder, the more that we teach mothers, you do not have the right to murder your baby, the more our culture will understand that truth, because the law is a good teacher. So for those who are saying, no, we just can't win the fight, or we need to keep our political life alive, all they're doing is contributing to the ongoing decay where people will go up to the point of 38 weeks, an unborn child aborted in Montreal. And we have to go the opposite way, where we protect life right where it starts, equal protection, we criminalize behavior, all of the things you've been talking about. And then 15, 20 years down the road, the demand is lower because the law is a good teacher, because children are so highly valued, because we return to a creational definition of what a child is, that as the psalmist says, we know that they are knit in their mother's womb by the Lord. So I just want to encourage you to keep going. And I wanted to give that Canadian example of how terrible this can be. And if you're if Brian, if you share out this video, and I hope you do, and those people who are following you kind of hear about this story, part of our calling here living in the U.S. is to shock Americans with where you can go, because Canada is just running off a cliff when it comes to freedoms, when it comes to big state, when it comes to hate speech, when it comes to no abortion laws. They are just running off the cliff towards Marxism, and many Canadian Christians are being duped by it, to the point where a 38-week-old unborn child being aborted is not, it's a little shocking, but it's not even that shocking. We have to go back. We have to go all the way back to where you're calling us in order for that trajectory not to happen. So if you're an American listener, join Brian, join endabortionnow.org, endabortionnowky.org if you're in Kentucky, or I'm sure you guys have that for every state. And just before I give you back the mic to finish off, I just want to read a little bit about the co-sponsor of the Kentucky bill. So Emily Calloway is a conservative Christian who fights for liberty, families, and values of all Kentuckians, born and preborn. And it talks about her bill. It allows you to read the bill right on endabortionkentucky.org or endabortionky.org. And so, folks, I encourage you, if you're not in this battle, if you're not in this battle in the U.S., if you're not in this battle in Canada, you've got to enter into it. You got to join with Brian and those of us who are saying end abortion now. Brian, you've graced us with about an hour of your time. I want to leave you with an opportunity to exhort individuals and also just to share any important information that you want to get out there.
Yeah, I want to make sure that I answer some of the common objections, and I want to end with a final exhortation. So let me just say this. Bills of equal protection and abolition do not cause a woman who has been coerced into an abortion to be punished. In fact, what would happen is the one who coerced the woman into abortion would be charged with homicide, or could be, if the prosecutor has the evidence to do so. So coerced women would not be punished under equal protection laws. Our homicide codes in every state in America already deal with the issue of coercion. It does not ban IVF. Rather, it would require the IVF industry not to create any more embryos than they would implant and attempt to preserve their lives. So IVF would just have to operate ethically and couldn't just create and destroy life as they see fit, but would have to preserve every life or attempt to preserve every life that is created. One of the things that your listeners also need to know is that when we talk about exceptions, which I don't believe there should be any exceptions in which you should be able to kill a child in the womb, but National Right to Life Committee now is totally open to exceptions. In the state of Oklahoma, Tony Lowinger, the vice president of National Right to Life, was in a committee supporting a bill to add rape and incest exceptions into Oklahoma law. Right now, Oklahoma law does not allow abortion clinics to do abortions on mothers just because the child's father is a rapist or incestuous, but the National Right to Life Committee now supports that. They say this would be a more durable law. It would be less likely to get struck down by a court, so we're gonna allow the abortion clinics to reopen. I'm not kidding, Michael. National Right to Life Committee and the pro-life establishment is fighting to reopen the abortion clinics in the state of Oklahoma right now with a bill that's being debated right now in the Oklahoma legislature because they want to allow abortions in the cases of rape and incest. It's unbelievable. And they call it pro-life. They want to allow abortion clinics to reopen in Oklahoma and they call it pro-life. That's insane. And it's true. That's actually what's happening. The pro-life establishment has stabbed us in the back, and we need to realize it. I'm getting fired up, brother. I'm a preacher, and I can't help myself. So I want people to hear that. I want you to know something else. If you really care about women who are having an abortion or who might be in a situation where they're considering abortion or being pressured to have an abortion, here's something that you also need to realize. There is nothing illegal about pressuring a woman to do a legal thing. If you pressure someone to go to the dentist and get their cavities filled, that's legal. You can pressure them to do that. Parents can say, if you won't go to the doctor and get medical care, then I'm going to kick you out of the house, whatever. But if abortion becomes homicide and you are pressuring a woman to commit homicide by having an abortion, then you pressuring her to commit homicide becomes a crime. Because right now, because abortion is not considered homicide, it is legal to threaten to kick a young teenage girl who is pregnant out of the home if she won't have an abortion. It is legal to threaten to remove financial support from her. Short of threatening her life and limb, it is legal to pressure her to have an abortion. If we passed a bill of equal protection, it would be a crime for parents to kick their teenage daughter out of the home because she won't have an abortion. And I know that's happening because I've served in pregnancy centers where teenage girls were being threatened with that very thing, and we had to find a Christian home that would take these 15, 16, year-old girls in because their parents said, if you don't have an abortion, you're not coming back to this house. That should be a crime, but it's legal right now because we don't treat abortion for what it is. It's murder. So when you think about equal protection, it actually does help women to a far greater extent. And we're not loving women by telling them that it's okay for them to kill their children, or they should have the right to kill their children, or it's their choice. No, it should never be our choice to take an innocent person's life. And so I just want to really emphasize that all of these objections to equal protection laws are absurd. And I would really encourage you to go to the Foundation to Abolish Abortion. Attorney Bradley Pierce does the best job of anyone I've ever seen answering all these objections. And I just want to end with this final exhortation. We don't need you to watch this podcast and say, well, that's good. I support what they're doing. I don't need you to pat me on the back. I don't need you to give me a thumbs up. I need you to get in the fight. And what it looks like right now in states across America where equal protection bills are being considered, go to the Foundation to Abolish Abortion and see the map of all the states where there's right now a bill of equal protection in your state legislature. We need you contacting your state representatives, your state senators, your governor. We need you talking to your pastors. We need churches speaking out on this. We need the people of God to rise up and demand the end to the legalized slaughter of children in our states and across this nation. We need you to do something about it. Listen, if you were living in 1930s and 1940s Nazi Germany, would you sit back and say, well, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, I think you're doing a good thing. I'm not going to say anything publicly, you know, because I don't want to risk my reputation or put my skin on the line, but good job. I really support what you're doing. Or would you be out there? Would you be fighting to put an end to this Holocaust against preborn children in our nation and in across our land? Brothers and sisters, we need you to get in the fight. And right now, one of the ways that we need to be fighting this is by fighting to pass bills of equal protection and abolition, by making phone calls, by going to your state capitol in person where these legislators are considering and debating these things, finding them and saying, hey, are you for the bill that will end abortion in our state? Are you for the bill that will give children in the womb equal protection? That's what we need you to be doing. And you might say, well, we don't have time to do this. The blood of innocent children is being shed every day in our land. We have a chance to end it. I would just ask you to reprioritize your life and to put the lives of these precious children in a much more important place than where we've been putting them. We all need to repent of our apathy, and we all need to get engaged. And we need to do it in the name of King Jesus and for his glory. And so my final exhortation is, get in the fight and really labor with us to end abortion across America and ultimately in nations across this world.
Well, everybody, you've been listening to another deep conversation here. As you've listened to Brian, and if you go to endabortionky.org, you can read for yourself all of the good material. Brian, what's that website that you mentioned again? What's that organization that you mentioned again?
So the Foundation to Abolish Abortion deals with great legal objections. And then I have my own personal website for my ministry, which is focused on ending abortion in Louisiana. And so my website is protectlifenow.org, protectlifenow.org. Okay. And the Foundation to Abolish Abortion is the best place to go for the arguments that people make against equal protection.
So, folks, you can read for yourself the absurdity of the, you know, people have legitimate questions because they've been so poorly trained. But once you read for yourself and you've listened to podcasts like this where we go into in-depth analysis, you can just see that having a biblical worldview, it's absurd not to get in the fight. It's absurd not to warn men, women, children, legislatures, future grandparents who are kicking their daughters out of their homes if they won't murder their own children. If you want a gospel opportunity, get in this fight in the name of Christ, and you can go and get involved. We really want you to do that. in Canada, we got to keep pressuring some of the conservatives and some of the PPC party in a way that would help them to table legislation. So folks, thanks for listening. Brian, thank you for being on. Share, like this podcast, share this around wherever you get your podcasts and wherever other individuals get their podcasts. We appreciate you doing that. Godspeed.